This is News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. And this is Atlanta. The food, the wine, the entertainment, the lifestyle. This is Melinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Brought to you this hour by Progressive Medical.
And welcome back to Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Other things to do in Atlanta are Fernbank Science Center. There are so many things to do in Fernbank. They have so many opportunities going on, and they've changed some things around. So here to talk about that is Jessica Schock. She is in the studio with us, and you have some new exhibits, some events that are going on that we need to let the listeners know about. First is the new exhibit that I'm all about because it's about food.
Yes, everyone's all about it. Food is such a great thing because it's something that touches everyone. Everyone knows about food, but there's still so much more to learn. And our new food exhibit just opened up June 9th, and it's going to run until August 19th. But it's this fantastic, immersive experience where you walk in, and it teaches you all about the different cultures of food through different timelines. And there's just so much to learn about it.
So give me an example. So what would I expect as someone walking into Fernbank? What would I see?
So if you walk in, actually one of my favorite areas kind of reimagines how different dining rooms would have been through different times.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, and my favorite is actually the Jane Austen dining room because, you know, way back when they didn't have electricity. So it talks about how ice cream was this delicacy and it was actually something just for the elite because it was so hard to store the ice cream
without
an icebox. Yeah.
I'm sure. Okay. Great. So that's a journey across cultures and time to explore food's history and the role it plays in our lives. And you talk about strolling through the ancient market, talking about cooking a virtual meal. How do you cook a virtual meal?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so that's one of my favorite parts of the exhibit. It's not just something where you walk in and you read about things on a wall. There's so many little sections of it where you can really engage with it. For example, we have this giant interactive digital table where four different people at one time can go through different ingredients and different recipes, and it'll show you right then and there exactly how to make it and what it'll turn out looking like.
Now, I could screw up a virtual recipe, Jessica.
You'd be surprised, but don't worry. It'll keep you on track.
Okay. So there are special lectures that you have as part of that.
Yeah, we actually have a special lecture coming up on Sunday, June 17th. It's going to be at 4:30 p.m. And it's all about how we kind of deal with food in, you know, in our modern day. And it's going to be offered by Dr. Jonathan K. Crane. He's actually from Emory University's Center for Ethics, so he's the perfect one to talk about it. Yep, and you're going to gain a whole new approach to eating in the modern age. He's going to talk about form through biology, philosophy, and even religion.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, now, so you can be a foodologist for a day.
Yeah, we have some foodology days, so we love our food exhibit. And we were really inspired to kind of create something out of that to make it a little bit more engaging. So whereas the food exhibit will talk about the history and the culture of different timelines, we really wanted to bring in some people from Atlanta's backyard. So we have two foodology days. One is going to be on July 7th. One is on August 4th. And they're all from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And it's going to feature food partners from your local Atlanta community. And the first foodology day, we even had Chef Jasmine Stewart. You all may have seen her on the Chef Master Junior.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah. Get some fun, exciting guests to come out, experts in your own food community.
That's great. So a lot of people think Fernbank, I'm just gonna look at dinosaurs and study dinosaurs. But Fernbank is so much more than just looking at dinosaurs and bones.
It is, yeah. We don't just want you to walk through and point at something and maybe read a little blurb about it. We want you to come in, experience it, really immerse yourself in it, and try to leave with something new.
Now, I love these, Fernbank After Dark. Those are some of my favorite series that y'all do. Tell me about that.
We love Fernbank After Dark. So that is when, for ages 21 and up, you can come on out to the museum after hours, and you can have the run of the place. You can even go outside to Wildwoods and Fernbank Forest. The next one is actually on July 13th, and that is going to be also inspired by our food exhibit. It's going to be Gastronomy Day, which is all about the relationship between food and cultures, and just like always, We're going to have live music, craft beer, and cocktails.
So I can walk around Fernbank with a cocktail and look at all the exhibits.
Yes, you can.
That's
yes.
the way I like to go through a museum.
Oh, yeah. So much fun.
Okay. Now, tell me about, did you call it Wildwood?
Oh, yeah, Wildwoods. So we have Fernbank Forest, which is a 65-acre old-growth forest. And that means that some of our trees are as old as 300 years old. So Wildwoods is a really cool area where when you first step outside of the museum, we don't just want to rush you into that forest. You're going to walk through an elevated platform, so you're kind of above the treetops. And there's a lot of little stations that'll show you what to look for when you actually get to the forest. There's a couple different barks that you can look at and even touch and feel to help you identify some of those trees once you get out there. You can see the different kind of wildlife you might get to spot out in the forest, because we've got otters, we have turtles, we have so many cool things out there.
So you said you're on a raised platform, so mm-hmm. you're at treetop level.
Yeah, you get to walk around, and it's funny because we have so many different trees. Some are going to be really far below you, some you'll be level with. It's very cool.
Now, when was this added to Fernbank? Because I didn't know that you even had this.
Oh, yeah. So Fernbank Forest has been around a long, long time. And we actually just added the Wildwood section back in 2014. And I believe it finished building in 2016. So it's relatively new.
Okay.
And we really want families to know, even if it's a gorgeous day and you're like, well, do we really want to be in a museum? You know, you've got the forest now, so you can go outside and have a good time with it.
So does your ticket for Fernbank also include the Wildwood Forest?
Yes, it does. Yep.
Oh, what a bargain.
There
you go.
Makes it easy.
So I'm sure your children's tours and things that you do love the Wildwood Forest.
Oh, they do. Yeah. And we have so many different tours that our educators actually put on. You might be able to walk through and they can point out different wildlife. They can point out different kinds of greenery. We even have a twilight tour that we do. You have to keep an eye out for it, so definitely check out our website. But they're wonderful little things that we offer so that you can really get the most out of Fernbank Forest.
And it's always changing. Your calendar is always changing. The exhibits are always changing. So where can people keep up with you?
Fernbankmuseum.org. That has everything on there. It's even got things listed, like movies that are coming to our giant screen theater. It's got new activities that you can go and do outside or inside the museum, new event days that are coming up, and, of course, Fernbank After Dark.
Now, tell me about the giant screen theater.
Oh, so that's really fun. It's actually really, really new to the museum. It just opened in 2017, and it's a 5-story screen. We call it our giant screen theater, and we always have 2 movies running. Right now, we have Museum Alive 3D, because our movie does play 3D, and that one will actually close very, very soon on June 21st, and then we'll bring in Oceans, our blue planet, also 3D, and we also have Backyard Wilderness, which will run until August, and that one's really fun, because if you were to watch that and then go out into the forest, you can kind of see how they deal with ecosystems, and they cover the topics of different wildlifes in cities in that film can relate to Fernbank Forest in Atlanta.
Oh, that's very cool. Okay, now these are upcoming events. Robots Day. That's something kids really love.
Oh, yeah. We love all of our little discovery days for families. And you're right. Robots Day is the next one coming up, June 23rd. And that's where we have a lot of, once again, local people in the Atlanta community coming out. They're bringing real robots. We have Peachy Bots, who are bringing a humanoid robot.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And it's super fun. And the kids can interact with them and even kind of learn how they were built. So it's a really great, engaging activity for them.
Okay, great. And then I love these. The Reptile Day.
Everyone loves the Reptile Day. We are going to have a whole bunch of different reptiles and amphibians. We're going to include them. So I'm talking snakes,
you can leave
lizards.
The snakes at home if you don't.
The snakes are actually a really great part of it. We have so many different ones come out. And the kids, once they realize that, you know, it's okay, it's not going to do anything, they love to get up close and personal and meet these animals.
Okay, that's really great that you have all these hands-on experiences for the kids.
Yep. Yeah, we love doing it.
So it's not just walking by reading plaques on a wall.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Now, what about STEM STEM Day.
Ah, so our summer STEM Day. So STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math, and we believe that it doesn't end when school ends. You've got to experience it all around you, and we like to bring out partners to come and kind of teach how STEM is involved in their different careers. So you might go ahead and see some more robots, but you might see some unusual people you wouldn't expect who deal with math or science all day long.
Like, for example...
Oh, like even a chef, that's so much chemistry in it. Like you wouldn't think, but they use it all the time.
That's exactly right. Okay, now what about, I see here a block party. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. So we love our Fernving After Dark, but we couldn't resist throwing a summer block party this summer. So we actually have a few different dates for that. We have one in June, June 23rd. We have a July 28th event. We have an August 19th event. So this summer block party, just like Fernving After Dark, no kids allowed. Loud, and you get to dive in a summer with indoor and outdoor fun. Now, I don't want to spoil the surprises for you, but it will definitely feature your same favorite adult beverages and even some tasty barbecue.
Oh, tasty barbecue. Okay. We just talked about that last hour. You're talking my language.
Oh, good.
Now, what about, I see we have treetop tails and tadpole tails. What's that about?
Oh, yeah. So that's one of the many things that we offer just day to day at Fernbank. We want to make sure that when you come in, again, you're not kind of bored. We want you to really engage. So our educators actually have treetop tails where they invite families and their kids to come outside and learn about a nature themed story. And they always have some kind of activity with it. And the tadpole tails, let's say that it's not going so great outside. It's a little, you know, maybe stormy today. Come on inside the museum. Tadpole tails will take place. Same thing. You get to read a cool story and have a fun activity with it.
Oh, that's great. So I know there are lots of things that people want to take part in. How can they, what's a website or how can they follow you and out when these are?
So if you go to our website, fernbankforest.org, that has everything. If there's something coming up, you're going to learn about it there first. Of course, we also have our social media platforms, Fernbank Museum, so definitely check us out.
Because there's so much coming up this summer for you and your family to do, and especially if you have out-of-town guests, this is something great to bring them to. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about more things that are going on at Fernbank this summer. You're listening to Atlanta Living only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now more of Belinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Treasures in the City is Fernbank Museum of Natural History. It's in our back door, and I have in the studio Jessica, and she is going to tell us more about this five-story screen that shows great movies here at Fernbank. So, Jessica, tell me, I mean, I'm intrigued by a five-story screen.
Oh, yeah. So that's our giant screen theater. We love it. It was actually recently renovated in 2017, so it's brand new. It's gorgeous when you walk inside, very comfortable. And we always have two movies playing. Right now, we have Museum Alive 3D because our theater can do 2D and 3D.
Yeah.
And that one will play for quite a while. And then we have Backyard Wilderness, which is super fun. But the Museum Alive 3D, it'll actually close next Thursday on June 21st. And at that time, we're going to bring in Oceans, our Blue Planet, also a 3D film. And that's going to be really great. You're going to get to dive into the largest and least explored habitat on Earth. And you get to learn about new things that have never been captured before.
Now, that is a separate price.
Yes.
Than
yes,
your ticket into Fernbank Museum.
Mm-hmm. It is a separate price because it is a theater. It's an add-on. But just for summer, we have some fun summer savings. You can save $8 if you pair your museum admission with that giant screen movie theater ticket. So for adults, it'll be $25, for kids, $23, and for a senior, it'll be $24, and that's to experience the museum all day and get into that theater.
Oh, that's really a great deal for all-day fun.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, and the website again for people to get more information.
FernbankMuseum.org. That's all of our movie times. You can even purchase your ticket in advance.
And folks, trust me, there is something going on every day this summer that your family can take part in at Fernbank Museum of Natural History. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us in the studio.
Thank you.
You're listening to Atlanta Living only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
This is News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. And this is Atlanta. The food, the wine, the entertainment, the lifestyle. This is Belinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Brought to you this hour by Progressive Medical.
And welcome to Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Are you looking for a fabulous wine? Well, let me introduce you to Tom Gore Vineyards. He is from California, and Tom's in the studio, and we're doing a little wine tasting with him. And he's been a grape farmer for how many years, Tom?
Well, I was raised in the vineyard, so most of my life, but professionally over 20.
Over 20 years. So tell me a little bit what it's like to be a grape farmer and have a vineyard.
Well, I've always loved being outside, and my parents moved to the area, or to Sonoma County specifically, in the early 70s, a couple years before I was born. And so I've just grown up in the vineyards. I don't know anything else. But
So were your parents in the vineyard and the grape business?
Yeah, my dad was a farmer also, and kind of followed in his footsteps. I always go back and forth between whether or not it's the thing I've always wanted to do or the thing he wanted me to do.
Well, after 20 years, hopefully it's the thing that you now want to do.
Oh, I love it. I don't think I want to do anything else. This is it's such a great combination of, like, actual farming and being outside, and then having an awesome product at the end that you can enjoy.
It's a very volatile business with the grapes. They seem so delicate, and the grape making process, that it seems a more delicate agricultural business than regular, say, if you were a tomato farmer or raising soybeans.
Well, I think we definitely all have our concerns with Mother Nature, and you know, one of the things I like to say is Mother Nature always bats last. So, no matter how good or how hard you work, it can all come down to an act of nature. I definitely think that, like, the process of it getting to the end is a finite process. So to your point of taking care of it all the way to the end, and the ironic part of it is that we squish it all up when it's done.
True. You kill it.
Yeah. You get these grapes perfect, tasting beautifully, nurture them along the way, and then we squish them up and ferment them.
Now, but it's become truly a science.
Absolutely.
Of making wine.
Yeah, and my focus is really growing grapes. I work with a fantastic winemaker that has been in my family and I've known since the early and mid 80s, and she's awesome. Her name's Maureen Martin. And my side of it is really growing the grapes. I'm a farmer first, and I'm involved in the winemaking process. But at the end of the day, I farm. And what I really focus on is how do you get the layers of flavor from the field? And so you think about it from a winemaking perspective. You have barrels, and you have yeast, and you have temperature, fermentation, and all those different things that slightly change the nuances that you get in the wine. And what I try to do is use sunshine and heat and coolness, and when we do the handwork passes, and when we prune, for example, or when we leaf, the different rootstocks that you would choose to plant, and the clones of the different varieties, to really do the layering of flavors on the front end so that you get something to the winery that's already got some complexity into it.
So we're drinking a Sauvignon Blanc right now, a Tom Gore Vineyard Sauvignon Blanc that is absolutely scrumptious. So tell us about this grape variety.
Well, Sauvignon Blanc, I think, is, I love it as a white wine, first of all.
It's my go-to.
Yeah, it's bright, it's vibrant. I feel like it's a wine that you can use with food, but it's also a wine that you can really easily have a glass of when you get home and mm-hmm. or on a hot day, and it really is refreshing. From growing it, it's the one that I harvest first every year. So it's one of my favorites from that perspective because you know that harvest has started once the Sauvignon Blanc is ready to pick. I really try to use the sunshine in California to my advantage with this wine and really get it to a real bright fruit kind of. And I pull a lot of leaves to get the fruit exposed to the sun, turn it golden. So when we harvest, when I harvest my Sauvignon Blanc, we're going to see a real golden profile in the fruit. It's hopefully going to...
Can a day make a difference?
A day can make some subtle differences, but 3 days can make a big difference. And if it's the wrong day, you know, if it's 105 degrees and it was perfect yesterday, that one day sure can make a difference.
Wow.
But generally, I would say that one day doesn't make a huge difference unless there is some extreme weather or something like that associated with it.
Okay. In your vineyard, are you, the wine that you're producing, do you grow all the grapes that you are producing wine with, or are you importing some of the other varieties?
We grow most of the grapes and all the varieties. The most is the Sauvignon Blanc, but we use a little bit of fruit from one of my really good friends for the Chardonnay that he grows down in the Central Coast. And but primarily, I grow everything.
And so with the subtleties, tell me when people are tasting wine and they say, oh, this has a fruit-forward subtlety of a little oakiness, is that coming from what you're doing, or is that coming from something that they're doing in the fermentation process?
Well, I would say that that the oak would come from oak aging in barrels. So
right.
That would be in the winemaking process. But the fruit-forwardness definitely comes from some of the work that we do and that I do and that we do in the field to get to nurture those fruit flavors like we were talking about a bit ago. So with Chardonnay, for example, you know, you can, if you do 100% of what they call malolactic fermentation and 100% oak, you're going to have a really strong wine that's based on some winemaking techniques.
I love this Chardonnay because it's not too strong.
Yeah, and so what I really want to do, again, is if we're going to talk about farming and how it shows through in wine, it has to taste like the Chardonnay grape. So, but at the same time, I really want it to stand up to food. And so one of the things that we do is use enough oak that the wine will stand up when it's paired with food. But at the same time, it's got enough fruit and enough flavor from the vineyard that that's also part of what we're showing off.
So how has your farming changed over the last 20 years?
Well, I think that we've definitely reduced the amount of water that we use. I think that both from a qualitative perspective and a sustainability perspective, that those are...
How have you managed that?
I think we've learned a lot about how grapes grow and when they need to be stressed and when they need to have water. You know, plants need water to survive, so we do one way or the other they get it, whether they search for it with their roots or whether we apply it through some irrigation. But there are some specific times of the year where you'll make better wine if they're stressed a little bit and if they don't have available water. And that's right kind of at the beginning of summer.
So that you want them stressed a little.
Yeah, yeah. But you don't want them stressed at the end of right before harvest. We want them stressed in the middle of the season, right after the fruit sets on the vine, which generally in California is late May through June. You'll start to see these little berries form and they start to size up. And if we can restrict how fast they grow, meaning if the plant is stressed and the berries stay small, the flavors will be a little more concentrated. And that's really one of the goals. Small berries equals high quality.
Okay. So we're talking about water. Do you fertilize? Do you use a organic fertilization? What do you use?
So one of the big things that I do for that is I make a lot of compost. We do use fertilizer, but most of what I put back in is I take the all the waste from the winery. So mm-hmm. after we press the white grapes and after we ferment the red grapes, I take all the skins and seeds and stems and put those out in a compost field. We turn them and get them hot and turn it into like what you would buy from a nursery as compost. And we put all that back out into the vineyard.
Now, I've gone to Napa and Sonoma and I've seen rose bushes. Sometimes at the end of rows of grapes. Now, is that for decoration or is that for insect control? What is that for?
I think it's mostly for decoration.
It was pretty.
I think, yeah, they're beautiful. I have a rose garden at my house too, so I love roses. Really what we do with that is, or where it started was powdery mildew is probably the largest fungus issue that you can have with grapes, and roses show powdery mildew before grapes do. So some people would see the mildew on the vineyards or on the roses and know that they were doing something or that same problem might be coming to the grapevines, and maybe there was some stuff that they could do at this point. I don't really know if there's a lot you can do to stop it if it's coming, but I think it was what they would call an indicator.
Okay. Now, do y'all share information as farmers and grape growers in the area, or is it kind of each man for himself?
I love to share information. I'm an open book with that kind of stuff. I love meeting with my colleagues and or my friends or however you want to, you know, lots of you call your competitor next door your best friend too, right?
Yeah.
So it's a really tight-knit farming community, and I really like to share whatever information I have. I would say most people are more than happy to talk to you about what they're doing, and I think a lot of the ways that our industry has moved forward is by people working together and trying to develop some of those relationships so that all grapes in Sonoma are moving forward, you know? I think about it as long as I'm in the wine business. Mm-hmm. So if you drink wine, it doesn't matter to me which one it was. Of course, I would prefer that it was mine. But at the same time, as long as people are drinking wine and the wine industry is doing really well, I have a place and something that I can still do and love.
Right.
So it doesn't matter to me if you like sweet wine. It doesn't matter to me if you like the biggest, boldest red wine. As long as my dad used to say all the time that the best wine you'll ever have is one you want to have another glass of.
Oh, what a great saying.
Right? I can hear that in the back of my head as a little kid, you know, and it just, to me, it means don't be too stuffy about it. Enjoy what you enjoy, and whether it's expensive or whether it's cheap or whether this person says this or whether it's just as long as you like it, just keep enjoying it.
Don't you feel like wine in the last few years has become so attainable is not the word I'm looking for, but so easily drinkable and less snobby?
I think that, but I think a lot of that is because really good wine is more and more available all the time. And so, like I said, personally,
good wine and the price point has really come down.
Yeah, and I really enjoy wine of all types and have always tried to embody like what my dad told me, where the idea is that you want it to be if somebody enjoys it, just let them enjoy it. And I think that it's also coming together with friends. I think that's what I've always seen is the connectiveness of wine. I think like beer is camaraderie and you know, wine is a little more connecting around a table and food, I think. And so I think about that, like when I was 7 years old, what was it about wine that when I didn't even know anything about wine that drew me towards farming wine grapes and not just farming corn or farming something else?
Right.
And I think it was watching the way that the end product brought people together.
Tom Gore has been in the studio with Tom Gore Vineyards. You're listening to Atlanta Living only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now back to Belinda Skelton.
Hey, welcome back, y'all, to Atlanta Living. It's time for Breaking Chews, our weekly check-in on all the up-to-the-minute breaking news about local restaurants, chefs, festivals. I'm here with our foodie correspondent, David Danzig of the website BitesAndSights.net, also a food writer for Atlanta Social Season magazine, and, of course, BelindaSkelton.com. So, something new in Midtown West recently opened, and that's no bull.
There's actually a lot of bull with the all-new Donetto. This is a gorgeous new Italian restaurant. Mm. It is named, so Donetto was a bull. It was actually the heaviest Chianina bull ever weighed. So this is a famous bull, Donetto.
That is a lot of bull.
It almost weighed 2 tons, like 3,800-pound bull. These are cattle that are raised in the Tuscan region of Italy, so it's just a great name, and it's a great backstory for Chef Michael Perez's new joint. It's over in Midtown West. It's literally across from James Beard-winning Miller Union.
Mm-hmm.
So if you haven't been over there, like this used to be this desolate industrial warehouse area just a few years ago. It has blossomed in such an unimaginable way. And there's so many heavy-hitting, award-winning restaurants like Miller Union. Optimist is right there. Lafitte. So many great places. And now this bull charges into the neighborhood, but it's a stunning inside and out. You walk up, it's this handsome designer, industrial concrete steel facade. The dining room is so cozy, though. It's got a lot of wood features. The floor itself is these really beautiful wood block pieces.
Cool.
There's brown leather accents. You walk in, it's just a really neat experience. So out of the kitchen, they have an open kitchen pasta station. You can watch them make pasta. Mm. Just melt in your mouth. Like pastas like tagliatelle, they make with clams. They make fusilli with smoked fish. They have other pastas with, you know, stuffed with quail. They do meats like steak Florentine. They have a, you know, a 45-day dry-aged bone-in ribeye. Octopus plated with white beans.
Gosh.
So many wonderful dishes. And I really adored their fritelle. It's a savory Italian dough. It's almost like an Italian donut.
Mm-hmm.
They cover it in this fresh shaved pecorino romano, and they do an 18-month cured prosciutto.
Oh,
this food is amazing. The cocktails are great too. Be sure to try the Net Spritz and Chill. Get it? Instead of Netflix and Chill.
Oh, I get it.
It's made with limonada, rosemary, Aperol, and Prosecco.
Yum.
And then they have another one called Absinthe Makes the Heart Grow Fonder.
Oh.
Of course, made with gin and honey and absinthe. So Donetto is just really my favorite kind of place. It's casual at the heart, but it's very deadly serious about their food and drinks. So not only does this place hold its own right there in that really crowded neighborhood of amazing restaurants, but really in the whole city, it's really one of my top new favorites. So check it out, Donetto. I've got great pictures up at belindaskelton.com.
Excellent. Where can we find you during the week?
My website is bitesnsites.net, and my handle on social media, Facebook, Instagram, is bitesnsites.
Okay. I can't wait to see what you find for us next week. You're listening to Atlanta Living, only on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB.